We are so much more than what we physically see and consciously know. We have major unexpressed potential within us. Part of being human is experiencing the magic of the moments in our lives and taking opportunities to grow, expand, and understand our inner selves as part of the journey of living. My name's Mary Spicer, and you're listening to The Mary Spicer Show here on 12radio.com, changing the way you listen to the world. Before we start the show, I thought I'd tell you a little bit about my background. I think I've always been psychic. I know that I've always seen other things that people haven't seen. I've always heard and talked to other imagined spirits as a child. And I deeply think that I was also highly empathic and psychic as a teen, always understanding what my friends' thoughts and feelings were, and always helping them to figure out a better way to revision the problem, a solution. I've been doing this work most of my life. I went to the Academy of Intuitive Medicine in Sausalito and studied for 3.5 years energy healing, intuitive medicine. I also use sound healing, flower essences, and restorative yoga in my healing practice. I deeply believe that we also create psychic healing as we do the psychic readings here on 12listen.com. I believe that all energy can heal, change, shift, allow, open, release, and most of all, help people really find what it is within themselves that they can truly connect to that opens up their sense of self-love, self-trust, and self-understanding. I am so lucky to be able to do this type of work. I deeply love it. I truly love to witness the healing that my clients create for themselves at 12listen. I'm really happy to be on 12radio and deeply appreciate this opportunity that Mark Husson has created for all of us here. So thank you, Mark. I really, really appreciate it. Please feel free to check out my website at maryspicer.com or join me at Facebook. Just search Mary Spicer and you'll find me. You can also sign up for my newsletter on my website on the right side at maryspicer.com. I look forward to connecting to you, and I'm very happy that you're here sharing your time and attention with me. I deeply appreciate it. Thank you. I thought for my first show, I might try something very personal. A story from my family about my mother's near-death experience. There are 3 segments to this story. The first, I interview my mother about what happened to her, what she remembers from her perspective. And secondly, I interview my dad, who actually saved my mother's life. And what a gift for us to actually have more time exploring even more deeply our relationship together. And then lastly, the third part is I actually tell my story from an energetic perspective. What I saw happen multidimensionally and how deeply I appreciate the veil between the worlds and all the otherworldly assistance we have in this life. We're here today with Catherine Spicer, my mother, and we are going to talk today about a really amazing story that's lived within our family for a couple of years. It happened in November 2009, where my mother had a near-death experience. Oh, sorry, it happened in November 2008. This is the first time she's agreed to actually talk to me about it for the radio show, so I'm really excited. But I'm really happy that she decided to stick around and come back, and we're going to hear her story. So I'd like to introduce to you my mother, Catherine Spicer.
It's nice to be here. I'm telling a story, most of which I wasn't present for, but I've heard all the details.
Great. Well, I will tell you, I was living in Kauai, and my younger sister called me up, and I had just finished setting up my healing office in Kauai, and just sat down, and my younger sister called and said that you were in the process of dying, and she was very, very upset, and her and my father had been here for the whole scene,
nightmare.
I suppose, is how to say it. But I'd like to hear from your words, what happened?
Well, I had a neuroma on my foot, which is an inflamed nerve ending. It sort of feels like you're walking around with a very large, sharp pebble in your shoe. Very uncomfortable, and I went through all the different things for about a year, and finally I said, enough, let's remove it. I went to a very reputable doctor. It was a very simple outpatient procedure. Went ahead and made the appointment and went into the outpatient clinic, had the surgery, and woke up and felt, you know, kind of woozy, but fine. And my husband escorted me to the car, and we came home, and everything was fine. But I took the pain pills that they prescribed that night and then again in the morning, and that's kind of all I remember.
Well, it's interesting, because I remember talking to you the night before your surgery, and you described it as a very minor surgery, no big deal, but you actually seemed in a very jovial and very clear mood. You seemed really clear to me. And I remember that we had a really loving conversation, and I remember that you had said something about not wanting Dad to have to take care of you. And I said, well, you know, it's okay. He's going to do a good job. He can take care of you. And you said, well, okay. And it's really interesting, because what happened is he really took care of you, didn't he?
Well, he was very much hanging over me the second day of surgery. He thought I was too out of it, too drugged to be normal for this mild pain pill that I had taken. And he called the doctor, and the doctor said, it sounds a little bit suspicious, but nothing to be alarmed about. And so he kept kind of marching around and watching over me. And finally he heard me making some peculiar noises and called 911, and they came immediately. And what had happened is I had aspirated. And so he did CPR on me for quite some time until the EMTs got here. They did that. They were not able to get my heart started or my breathing started. So they transported me in an ambulance to the nearest hospital. Then all the rest of this is what I hear happen. Apparently, when I got to the hospital, the doctors and everyone else there said, it doesn't look good at all. It's, you know, be prepared, it's not good. So then, anyway, later they did get my heart started, and I was breathing somewhat on my own, and I was in a coma. This is where the really miraculous part of the story comes along. My children were sitting there with my husband, and this intern came into the room, and she asked if my husband and children would be interested in having my blood temperature lowered. It's sometimes referred to as freezing, but it isn't freezing at all. And she said she had been an intern at University of San Francisco Hospital, and she had seen this done with remarkable results. couldn't explain that while the body temperature is lower, that some of the organs repair and rest and repair, but mostly the brain. And I had brain waves, or they wouldn't have bothered to do this, but the brain waves or activity was measured below normal. Had I come out of the coma without this lowering of the body temperature, I would have probably had to be in some kind of a home to be cared for pretty much 24/7. And so my husband said immediately, yes, do that. And it was kind of a cute thing because the girl said, well, Dad, you don't even know what's involved. He said, but I know your mother. And so they proceeded to do that. And it took a day or two. And
to lower your temperature.
They lowered the blood temperature.
Yeah. Not just the blood temperature, but when I touched you, it was really cold. You definitely didn't feel human, and you didn't feel alive.
It's only about 3 or 4 degrees.
Yeah, but you were cold. It was very, very surreal. Before they did that, they had done last rites on you, right?
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
They did that when I came into the hospital.
Yeah.
It was pretty much 51 minutes with no breathing or heartbeat.
Yeah.
Pretty much dead.
51 minutes with no breath and no heartbeat. Do you remember anything about being in the coma?
No. I remember, well, I don't know when it happened, but I do remember seeing people, and they were sort of rolling by in waves. I mean, big lists of them, not lists, but big lines of them, you know, standing there looking at me, talking to me, and you know, I was aware of them, they were aware of me. But I don't know if that was as I was coming out or some other time. I just know that there was this communication, and I saw my sister and my brother who have died, and my parents, and a lot of odd people that weren't really very important in my life, that I kind of wondered how come I was seeing them, you know, and not others.
But most of the people that you saw were people that had passed, that weren't on...
As far as I know, yes.
Yeah, so they were people that had already passed on, kind of visiting you, checking in, and saying hello.
Well, yeah, just, you know, saying, are you coming or not?
Yeah, definitely.
But, I was aware, or I felt aware in my coma state, that there was this real engagement between us, real communication, but I can't really remember exactly what words, but there was more almost looks and just an understanding.
Do you remember anything else about that, being in that state?
Nothing that I really can be sure of, because when you come out of a coma, there's sort of a time period, and it may be seconds, it may be hours, I don't know, but where you are aware that people who are alive are there, but you're kind of drifty, you know, in and out of consciousness. So, you know, you don't know for sure. You can't pinpoint what happened when and how and what state you were in at the time.
Mm-hmm. So when I was coming back on the airplane from Kauai to California, one of the guides that I work with a great deal, called Mary Magdalene, she gives me information when I do energy work and energy healings. I work with her a great deal. She showed up on the airplane, and she showed me a vision of you going through what in the line of work I do are called Akashic records or soul records. And she showed me this vision of you going very quickly through all these books. It was like you were taking in this information really quickly. And what she expressed to me was that you were deciding, making your mind up. And she said, either way, it will be fully supported. And I thanked her for that information. And the way I interpreted that whether you were going to go or stay, that it was going to be quick and as painless as possible. So that was kind of the first feeling I got for my own experience. And then it was really interesting coming home and seeing the family and, you know, my two sisters who were very much supporting you and very scared and supporting Dad, and my father, Jim Spicer, who of course had been instrumental in saving your life and knew CPR and knew all these things already, really was very, very worried and scared, of course, which anybody would be. And then my younger brother, who really, of course, was just there with his big heart. So it was interesting from our perspective because you had several doctors, and one of the doctors was the brainwave doctor, and she kept telling us that it didn't look good, but she had this amazing amount of hope. And I really liked her because I felt that if anybody was going to kind of hold the energy of getting you back here, she actually felt like somebody who could be a part of that. And
was she the one who did?
The brainwave. She worked with your brainwaves. And the other doctor was more your body doctor, and she didn't seem very, she was a little grim. And they kept telling us, it's not going to happen. It doesn't look good. And the nurses were the ones who gave us hope. And they kept saying, there was one nurse in particular, and she kept saying, miracles can happen. She said, I see it all the time. And so I was just kind of holding that middle space. But I did ask one of the nurses, what happens when somebody starts to come out of a coma? And she said, well, their eyes will start to flutter. In the beginning, their eyes start to flutter just a little bit. And then their hands might start involuntary movements where their hands might start moving. And then she said that they might open their eyes up, and then their eyes might stay open for a while. And then they might start tracking you, like watching people move in the room. And so it's just this kind of involuntary movement of the eyes. And then she said that their hands will start to grab things. And over the next couple of days, you did exactly what the nurses said. Your eyes opened. You started tracking people.
And does it take that long?
It seemed like it took like four or five days for you to kind of come into this state. And it was amazing. And everybody, including the doctors, were freaking out.
Well, you have to understand that the first time they did this body temperature lowering thing at this hospital was on me. So most of the people, the nurses and the doctors there, had never seen it and couldn't believe that anyone who'd been without heartbeat and breath for 51 minutes could recover and be so relatively compos mentis. And so that was, you know, it was like a miracle that everybody was witnessing.
Yeah.
My family, and of course, I didn't have enough information to appreciate what was going on at the time. It was much later when I learned all of the ins and outs and ups and downs of the whole story that I was able to understand what a fantastic happening it was and how grateful I am.
As you came out of the coma, tell me what your experience was.
I think I said something to the effect like, what is going on here? You know, please fill me in here. Where am I and what am I doing here and why and how? And, you know, 55 questions in 10 seconds and I want the answers right now. But yeah, I mean, that was, I think, kind of, somebody laughed and said, it's just like her. So that's kind of gave them the impression that, yes, my intelligence had returned to whatever normal was for me.
Whatever your normal baseline was.
Yeah.
As far as your recovery, it's funny. when I would come back and forth from Kauai to here, you would be gone. I would stay at your home and you would be gone and your doctor would call. He called twice when you were gone. Because after you recovered fully, you and Dad started going on a lot of trips. So your doctor would call and always say, "This kind of thing just doesn't happen all the time. It's really amazing. It's really reaffirming for us to have this happen. This kind of thing just doesn't happen all the time." And he was so excited about it.
Well, I was transferred to another hospital for therapy 3 or 4 weeks after this. And everyone there wanted to hear the whole story, all the medical people. And, you know, it is a new thing. And my doctor said he had heard of seeing only one other person that had this procedure done that helped. It was really amazing.
Do you think you made a choice to come back?
I'm not sure about that, but I like to think I wanted to sit around and see what was going to happen with all my kids and grandkids. Not that I thought they couldn't do it just fine without me. I know they can, but there's a great deal of joy watching those you love. I'm not sure I made that choice, but if I had, that would have been the reason.
What did you and Jim Spicer come to find through this?
That's a hard one. I'm not sure you could say what we learned or came to find that we didn't already know. Maybe some of the things are things we've known and believed and felt for 50, 60, 70 years, that love is good. And love moves mountains. And sharing of love is very, very important.
And is there anything that somebody who was without a heartbeat or a breath for 51 minutes, is there anything that you want to tell us about that experience?
That experience, fortunately or unfortunately, is something I have very little memory of. But knowing what happened makes you realize so much more, something you've known always, that every single minute of every single day is so, so important. And live it to the very highest that you're capable of doing.
You don't know how lucky I am to have my mother with me today. I think it's been such a great opportunity for us to revision our relationship, to really, really appreciate who we are, not just as mother and daughter, but also as human to human, friend to friend. I look at her so differently than I used to, and I so much appreciate this time that we've had together. This second time. Thank you so much for listening to The Mary Spicer Show. Up next, we'll talk to my father, and I'll give you a little bit more info on what's coming down the road on this show. And I deeply appreciate you being here at 1-2 Radio, changing the way we listen to the world. Thank you. Hello, hello, hello. This is Mary Spicer. Welcome back. And you're listening to The Mary Spicer Show at 1-2 Radio, changing the way you listen to the world. So excited that you're here with me today. Please feel free to connect to me at 1-2-Listen. I'm an advisor there. You can also connect with me at maryspicer.com or on Facebook at Mary Spicer or Mary Spicer Soul Alchemy. I am now here with my father, James Spicer. We are going to talk about what happened, what my dad remembers when my mother's heart stopped. I'd love to hear your story and what you remember around that.
As you know, probably from talking to your mother, she went in and had foot surgery, wanted to go right to bed. She was sleepy. We're supposed to give her medication every 4 hours, which I did, woke her up and gave her medication. And then the next morning, she was still very groggy. I was going in checking on her all day and made myself dinner, was sitting here, decided to go in. And it didn't look like, she didn't look like she was breathing. And then I checked her pulse, I couldn't find any. So I called 911 and then I started giving her artificial respiration, mouth to mouth, and did that until the fire department rescue squad arrived, and they then took over.
You couldn't get a pulse, right?
No, I couldn't get a pulse.
Okay.
No. And they came in the bedroom and took over, and they were there just for a few minutes. And when they brought your mother out, I was out front, and then they brought your mother out to the doorway, the front door, and they were trying to shock her, and they said they couldn't because there was no electric, I think are the right words, response. So they decided, they asked me what hospital to take her to, and I told them. So anyways, I got to the hospital. Well, first when we got in there, they were all these doctors, a doctor, the emergency room doctor was working on her, and then they had called down a cardiologist who was working on her, and then her doctor came in, and he told me that it doesn't look good. The other doctor, the emergency room doctor, told me that, you know, we don't think we're going to make it. I went back outside. Oh, also Christina had called, as I asked her to, the Catholic priest, Father Cardelli, and he showed up in the emergency room. So Cardelli also said that he went in and talked to the doctors, and they told him the same thing, that she wasn't going to make it. And then this was going on for a few minutes, maybe 5, 6, 7 minutes. And then I went back in, and I watching him, and I saw on the screen her heart start to beat. And sure enough, her heart was coming back, okay? So this went on for a good 45 minutes. Now she's beating again, and they're breathing for her. And then maybe half an hour later, they took her off the
respirator.
Respirator, thank you. Wrapped that around her, and they took her up to the
ICU.
Intensive care unit. They were doing tests on her, and the most significant test initially was the test from the brain expert, and she's telling us that it was below where it should have been. So that then became a concern of ours, especially me, because Mother and I had agreed to, if something like that happens, we're going to arrange for her death, because we didn't want to live not being a normal human being. Then they came to me and said there was a new procedure out of Stanford where they would drop her body temperature X degrees, I don't remember, you know, from 98 down to 80 something. And first time they tried it, nothing happened. They tried it again, and again I said, go ahead, we have nothing to lose. And they tried it again, and lo and behold, she began to come around. It wasn't quick, probably another week she was in intensive care, and then we sent her to a different hospital, rehabilitation, and she was there total in the hospital about a month, month and a week. So that's what happened. She's healthier today than she was 15 years ago, physically.
So, so what do you think about her coming back? It was kind of scary, right?
Oh, sure. You know, a lot of things go through your mind. You know, I don't think I ever thought of living without her. Be honest with you, I think after the first 4 or 5 days, I felt she was eventually going to come back. I was very concerned, but the brain wave, whatever the tests they do, came back to normal. And again, as I think it's worked out fine. It was, it was an interesting, difficult time. So.
Yeah. How many years have you been married?
Almost 51.
Yeah. And you celebrated your 50th last year.
Right. With all of our family, we got together and had a nice celebration.
Mm-hmm. That she actually got to make, because if she hadn't come back, you would only have 48 years with her, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have known how to even make for a party that she had like that, because she is completely, for the most part, dominated in a nice way. Our relationship in that regard has been good.
So. Yeah. So you learned how to do your own laundry, right?
No, I never did.
Well, you did when she was in the hospital.
No, I never did. I forgot really? What I did with it. I think I took it over to Christine and Ann's house.
And
one of the neighbors did it. I don't know. And then a cute story, when all Kay's friends wanted, you know, I got a call and they didn't want to leave food and everything at the house. And I kept telling them I have daughters. I don't need any food, because I didn't want to have them all coming to the house. So one of our neighbor ladies bought me over 10 chicken pot pies, which sustained me for the few days. So that's what I did.
Do you think that there was some miracle in that?
Oh, I don't know whether it was a miracle. As you know, I'm Catholic. I'm not going to say it was a miracle. The fact that I got up from the couch and went in there when I did, I could have sat there another hour. Would she have come back? Most likely not, because it would have been an hour and 51 some minutes. Could it have been the fact that I was aware of some of the medical things I should do because of my background? I used to, in my companies, had a lot of training. I brought in people to train my people for this situation, plus my time in the service.
Where you were an EMT in the
service.
That's
correct.
Yeah,
that's
so you had some medical...
But that was 55 years ago. But yeah, I had I had an idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, I don't know if it was a miracle. I won't say it wasn't, but I mean, obviously, that close to death, everything had to click. In other words, the EMT guys had to get her in time. They had to begin giving her the breathing, get that clear and better on time. The fact that we got her right into the emergency room on time. The fact that we had trained personnel in the emergency room, you know, it was very impressive, by the way, the emergency room. Very impressive, so. I don't remember actually being scared, and I felt, I guess from the get-go, that she was going to be fine.
I felt
I don't know why I felt that way, but I did.
Yeah, I felt she was going to be fine, too.
I mean, there's some scary moments, you know, especially all the hospital procedures. You don't really understand them. Maybe not related to what you want to hear, but I was having a difficult time getting information from the guy in charge of the emergency room, okay, or of the intensive care unit. So one night, Kay's sister was in town, and we went over to Diablo and had dinner. Well, lo and behold, all of our doctors from this cardiologist were in that whole hospital, were having a Christmas party. And my cardiologist and a couple other guys who had seen your mother said, "There's the guy you want to talk to right over there, Jim. Go get him." No, I'm not going to bother him. So it's kind of a small world.
So it was another synchronistic story that you wanted to get some information, and just going to a restaurant 5 minutes from your house, there's all your cardiologists just sitting there having,
that's correct,
having dinner.
A Christmas party.
Hanging out, having a Christmas party. So it felt like there was a lot of just synchronicity.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah.
It went well, and I stopped by the fire department. We have the, it was close by, and knocked on their door and thanked them. Mm-hmm. Your mother and I took some cookies that your mother had made, or we bought, I guess, all back over to the intensive care unit, and they all were pleased to see her. And we thanked them for everything, and they were very thankful that for the...
What did the nurses and doctors say?
They said a miracle. Okay, and who am I to say it wasn't? But two of our doctors, especially her internist, said it was a miracle. And here's a little side effect. And when I called him before your mother came out of the coma, he said to me, "You know, Jim, you may not wish you had done the artificial respiration because of the brain problem." So, but he thought it was a miracle, especially when he saw her, and he came to see her a number of times in the hospital. And then, and especially a couple of the nurses in the rehab felt it was a miracle.
So I'm happy she's here. What about you?
And I love your mother very much. After 50 plus years, you know, you've got to, it would have been a terrible thing if she didn't come out of this thing, for me personally.
I agree.
Okay.
Cool.
Good.
Well, thank you so much, Jim Spicer.
All right, Mary Spicer.
I love you.
I love you too.
I call this story The Reluctant Miracle, not so much because it was or it was not a miracle. That doesn't really matter. I just think that my parents are still processing it. It was big. My father saved my mother's life. I think that we're all really lucky. I would like to share what I witnessed or visioned from my psychic sense or my multidimensional sense while my mother was in the process of her coma and coming back. Whatever that was, it was really interesting to witness. Another amazing visit from a spirit friend, a guide, an energy guide, not a human here on Earth. I had come home from Kauai and it was pretty grim, as you've heard. We were 3 or 4 days into it and I was taking a shower. And in the shower, all of a sudden, I got a telepathic hit. My energetic friend, Mary Magdalene. She came in and psychically expressed to me that my mother was coming back in 2 days. And I said, "What do you mean in 2 days?" And she said, "She's coming back for closure." And I said, "Okay, what does closure mean? Does closure mean that she's gonna open up her eyes and say goodbye to us and then she's gone forever? What does closure mean?" Of course, Mary Magdalene, being Mary Magdalene, means she didn't answer me because she likes to give information short and sweet sometimes. That's kind of what I like about her. But sure enough, 2 days after that, my mother started waking up out of her coma. She started doing the involuntary movements. I was sitting there with my younger brother, and he was talking very deeply and lovingly about himself and his role in the family and my mother. And then all of a sudden, he looked at me and he freaked out. And he said, "She grabbed my hand." He said, "She grabbed my hand." It was the most beautiful thing to witness. It was so amazing. There's been a few times that I've actually seen people in the process of what I call the veil in between the worlds. It's a really beautiful process. This is just the way that I envision it. I'm sure other people have different ways of looking at it. But to my imagination or my perspective, the 3 times that I've actually seen people deciding on whether to stay or go in the veil between the worlds, I've always seen the same vision. See it literally like 2 veils. And I always see kind of from a top-down perspective. I'm kind of up above looking at this process that's happening somewhere very far away from me. And I literally see the Earth realm, or this dimension, as kind of separated by a beautiful black silvery curtain, a veil. And it seems like it's almost like a mist that you could put your hand through it. It feels very soft. The first veil separates the Earth from this in-between space. The in-between space is not fully here, present on Earth, and not fully dead. And so the in-between space is a place where I actually think there's a lot of spiritual action, a lot of decision-making going on, a lot of sorting, a lot of healing, a lot of allowing going on. There's the Earth realm, the veil, and then I always see, with the three people that I've seen in this position, the in-between space, there's usually the person that's in the in-between space, lying down on a kind of, it looks like a table in the center of this space. I always see about 12 to maybe 13 or could be 20 people surrounding this person. And some of them look like guides, spirit guides, angels, ascended masters, whatever that person has chosen to be there for them. So often see the spirits of the people that the in-between person knows on Earth. I do think that there is an aspect of the spirit sense of the people that still are here on Earth that are working in this in-between space, kind of connecting on a spirit-to-spirit, heart-to-heart level with the person who's in the in-between space. I also have seen aspects of the lineage, maybe representatives from the lineage, from the ancestors, who seem to, some of them, not all of them, have seemed to be in this in-between space, this the veil between the worlds space. And it feels like this is a space where the soul, on some level, does some kind of recognition. The way I look at it, and this is just my perspective, that the soul is making a decision whether to come back to this world, the earth plane, or go to the other plane. When my mother was in this space, there was only one time that she came to visit me, and this was in a more psychic sense. She didn't do it physically. And she kind of looked unhinged or untethered, and it didn't really feel to me that it was a good place, because I felt that she was still in the in-between place, but not in a place that felt as loving and nourishing and nurturing as the circle with the guides and the families around it. So I actually connected to her and said, I really hoped or wished that she connected back into that circle because it felt very safe and loving to me. And then on the other side of the veil, so we have the earth veil, this kind of room, the in-between space. And then I've always seen a veil on the other side. I always see it in this odd way. It is literally like a line of ancestors. And it usually starts with the souls or the person in the in-between space. It starts with their immediate family that has passed on, almost like a greeting committee. This is how I envision it. It does seem to go back in a line. I thought it was really amazing and fabulous to witness something like this. It really made me understand, at least from my perspective, that there's so much more going on than what we actually physically see and consciously know. I think this world, this universe, the psychic spaces, the mystical spaces, are so filled with hope and wonder, and so much good energy is always out there for us. Sometimes I think that we fret so much here on Earth about little things myself included. Some days I'll spend running around in my mind and wondering why I'm thinking the things I think. And then I'll get these glimpses, these big picture shots on why I really think we're here. And then I find that I feel expansive. I remember, I open, I allow, I release, and I just do my very best to be here. A spirit in a body, here in this realm, where all the magic of all the realms is always present. I'm so pleased that you came here to hear my story. This is part of my soul story, part of my family story. You are listening to The Mary Spicer Show on 12radio.com, changing the way you listen to the world. Aloha.